KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
For more than 30 years, the Puget Sound Rebels have been entertaining the Northwest with a long series of annual plays and musical productions during the holiday season. This year's production centers around a place called Seneca Village, a small African-American settlement that was established in 1825 in what today is known as Central Park in New York City. Meet the Puget Sound Rebels next on Northwest Now. Their motto is, We Fling Joy, and the Midwinter Revels program has been flinging joy since December of 1994 at Tacoma's Rialto Theater. The National Revels organization is based in Watertown, Massachusetts, and there are 9 active Revels companies across the United States, one being right here in Tacoma. This year's Midwinter Revels opens tomorrow night and runs through Wednesday of next week. As Steve Kiggins tells us now, the cast has been hard at work preparing their parts and getting into the spirit.
The mantra is, we fling joy.
In early December, cast and crew stretch their vocal cords and rehearse lines, preparing for the latest production from Puget Sound Rebels.
It's definitely not your regular program.
This is a celebration of like resilience and community.
Revels stage director Michelle Matlock wrote and directs this season's production titled The Midwinter Revels. Christmas time in Seneca Village.
The group, the founders here, I want you to come up to her level.
It's a theatrical production depicting the times and lives of free Black Americans who built community beginning in 1825 in a place called Seneca Village.
It became a symbiotic community, an integrated community, which we find in terms of messaging, in terms of what that's important is. It's about a unity and it's about belonging.
Unity and belonging. Just a pair of the themes woven through the latest Puget Sound Rebels production celebrates the legacy of Seneca Village.
It's not some ramshackle shanty town. There were people who owned their property and built proper homes.
Seneca Village was founded in 1825. The community also welcomed Irish and German immigrant families until 1857, when settlers were forced to leave and their homes were torn down in order to build what is now New York City's Central Park.
Those individuals who formed that community went off and formed new communities. They knew how to do it. They knew what it took.
Even though, you know, all the people of Seneca Village were removed because of Central Park, they went on to do wonderful things.
Seneca Village, New York.
The production premieres inside the historic Rialto Theater in downtown Tacoma, where cast and crew performs 5 shows with professional actors and musicians. Christmas time in Seneca Village aims to celebrate community and culture through traditions of song, dance, and story, highlighting the values that brought Seneca Village together and continues to strengthen South Puget Sound communities today.
We think about this story in terms of themes of hope, resilience, community, unity, all of those things that are really needed right now.
In Tacoma, Steve Kiggins, Northwest Now.
Joining us now are Amy Wigstrom, the executive director of the Puget Sound Rebels, Michelle Matlock, playwright and stage director, and Megan Oberfield, the Puget Sound Rebels music director for 20 years. Welcome all of you to Northwest Now. Great to have a conversation about the Puget Sound Rebels and this annual production you do every year. This year, really an interesting story that you folks discovered and decided you want to invest some time and resources in, the story of Christmas time in Seneca Village. Let's start with a little bit of a history about that. A guy named Andrew Williams founds this village back in 1825, before the abolition of slavery in New York City. So, Amy, this is a piece of work you were really having to reach back into the past to try to pull together into a modern story. Talk a little bit about that process and what you've learned about Seneca Village in during that process.
Well, when Michelle came to me with the idea of
centering this year's show on Seneca Village, I said, "What Seneca Village?"
Yeah.
And I had to do research to kind of catch up with her inspiration, which took me all over the internet and through books. But once I understood what her vision was, I was hooked. It was goosebumps. Yeah. And I was immediately on board for what Michelle was hoping to create.
Michelle, talk a little bit about your inspiration for this. This is, you know, archaeology is telling us more and more. It was kind of a response to folks in New York City trying to kind of get away from some of the racism and some of the problems in the downtown area of New York, because back in the day, Central Park was out in the sticks.
That's right. It didn't look like we know Central Park to look like today. It was rural and rocky and farmland and whatnot. And so, yeah, when I was researching, trying to find something that I could write about and bring to the Rebels, I found Seneca Village. I didn't know about that history either. And I happened the very next week to be going to New York. So I went up to where it existed. And there's lots of history and information and plaques where everything, where they found foundations of the church and houses and whatnot. And I just thought that it was perfect for Rebels platform, since Seneca Village was founded by free and formerly enslaved African Americans,
who were property owners and voted.
That's right. They bought the land so that they could vote. Uh-huh. That was part of the strategy. A lot of people bought land there and didn't live there just to be able to vote. But Andrew Williams did live there and built homes there and invited and cultivated this whole community that also included Irish and German and even indigenous folks. So that's where it became really clear that we could, you know, be inspired using the Rebels platform to tell this story, because there's a mixture of diversity and cultures that we could really pull from.
The cultural piece, Megan, you're trying to get in touch as the music director too with something that occurred, you know, many years in the past. We have a pretty robust archive of classical music from Western traditions, European traditions. What's the resource for this?
There are equally abundant folk song resources throughout the academia and throughout the folk community. And so finding people who have done their studies in that and finding mm-hmm. people who are aware of a certain tradition or from a certain area, there's much, much that's been recorded and there's much that's been speculated on. And the nature of folk music is that it evolves and changes constantly. So trying to find primary sources and trying to find things that have come down with a chain of evidence that shows us that this really happened or it was really done this way. There's also some guesswork.
So you really had to put your musicologist hat on there.
Very much so.
To investigate this. Is this an original score, or does it borrow, or how do you manage that?
It will be an original score, but we're pulling folk music from all the different traditions. We try to build a village on the stage and set up something that our audience can come in, and by the end of the 2 hours, they'll be part of that village too. So we're trying to find things that inform the drama and also give us a sense of space and time, and also work with the resources that we have at hand, the performers and the instruments and what's going to work for us.
Yeah, Michelle, as the playwright, this story in real life only lasts 32 years. So do you take this all the way to the end of the dissolution of Seneca Village, or do you kind of stop at a happier time when people are celebrating Christmas? How do you approach that? Because a big part of this story is, you know, the media back then kind of doing a smear campaign, calling right. them tramps and squatters and pulling out the old eminent domain to boot them off their property.
That's right.
To turn it into Central Park, which is a wonderful resource, but still, point being, it wasn't pretty. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, and, you know, that whole thing, eminent domain, and I mean, it's a part of our American history with a lot of African-American neighborhoods throughout history, right? So we know that that's happened. We know that that's very sad. But we're choosing not to focus on that. We're choosing to focus on the celebration that they were able to do this and that they existed and that they were a diverse community, unlike any other community, I think, at that time, where, you know, they were going to school together, they were being buried together, they were going to church together. I think that there's something really unique about that and perfect for the Rebels platform. So, yeah, we're focusing in on maybe that 10 years prior to, you know, when the battle was just beginning.
Peak Seneca Village, kind of.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we do bring in sort of our dark part is that the park is coming in to do this, but it's like maybe that first victory they had when they weren't able to do it as quickly as the city wanted to. So we're really focusing in on the joy, the trading of, you know, traditions and culture, and just it's like when we spoke to the descendants of Andrew Williams, you know, they were very much about this is a story of celebration. They don't see it as a bad thing because their descendant went on after Seneca Village to create other villages in New York and left them a legacy. So it's not a sad thing.
Amy, can you talk a little bit about the involvement of the Williams family? How did you communicate with them? Did they find you? You find them? What was the story there?
So in the research I was doing, trying to find references and books, I stumbled upon a self-written family history book that they had published. And I bought a copy and I thumbed through it, and lo and behold, it was the descendants of Andrew Williams. So then, like any other person, I'm Googling them and I'm trying to figure out how I can get in contact because there wasn't any contact information in the book. So I went on LinkedIn and I found Mariah. She is the wife of Andrew Williams. And I messaged her on LinkedIn and she had a willingness to communicate and do a Zoom call with Michelle and I.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the process of lifting this up. From, you know, I think a lot of people, the idea they go to a play and it's like, oh, well, to make a play, people do their parts and we watch it and then we're done and we go have dinner. No, this thing has to be stood up from nothing. How did you get the involvement of the family, getting the story right, doing the research to make it historically accurate, and then turn this into a Christmas celebration that's got the set correct for it and all the pieces? You've talked about that in general, but I guess maybe explain to folks what it takes to lift that up into an actual production.
Well, first I just want to say that the what we're doing with Revels is inspired by the story of Seneca Village. We aren't trying to do a reenactment of the history. I've taken some of the primary characters that I found in history that were there, and I've created their profiles for them to share the beginnings of this village. So I don't want anyone come and think that they're going to get like a total historical reenactment.
Well, it doesn't exist. I mean, you have to project
right.
Some, you have to, what might they have said? How might they have acted? How might they have reacted?
Yes.
Which is the art part of this.
That's right. And I spent the past 30 years writing original works that bring untold stories, especially African-American stories, to life. And so I was very familiar with that. Yeah. And so, so we want to honor the story and be inspired by what happened there, what we know and what we can feel, but it's not gonna be a reenactment, but it's gonna be a celebration of Seneca Village for sure.
Megan, on the musical piece, Benjamin Hunter, I don't know anything about him. Maybe you could talk to him a little bit. You gestured earlier at kind of doing this major research piece that you had to do and finding those resources and touch points in folk music to give you that authenticity that you're looking for. He sounds like a great resource. How did you find him and what does he bring to the table for you?
Well, Ben Hunter is a Northwest treasure, and he's an African-American man who now lives on Vashon, and he's a fiddler and a storyteller. And he has
maybe a future guest, I'm thinking.
He has his hand in many pies, uh-huh. In the musical and the folklore world. And so we had worked with him previously on another show, and we were able to call on him to help us flesh out some of the music. He has some historical studies that he's done, and so he's well versed in what would be appropriate, and digging through the minefield of what's appropriate and what's appropriation, and finding the balance between those kind of things. So he's pulled together a band, an African American band. He's pulling up a banjo player from Oakland and a bass player, a local bass player.
Okay, I love that. Getting it right between appropriate and appropriation. Amy, you went through a process with the community, I think proactively to get the rebels to that place. Talk a little bit about what that process was, what you were seeking in it, and I think the mayor's involved too, right?
Right. So one of the things that's really important about our shows when we approach a cultural aspect is to find tradition bearers, kind of to Megan's point, what's appropriate. And so what I sought to do is meet with a lot of different civic leaders in our Black community to gain their advice and support on the topic and the show. We did meet with the mayor, and she immediately asked for a role. And so
a walk-on role.
Michelle created a walk-on role for the mayor.
Not totally surprised.
But also, you know, the themes of the show that Michelle has written, the themes of resilience and hope and community and unity, really resonate with a lot of folks right now. And we're doing a panel discussion with some of our civic leaders in partnership with the Tacoma Urban League about how this show lends to being able to talk about those important themes in our community and what that means to us in the here and now.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one thing about appropriation? Sure. About appropriation is that usually it happens when it's out of context and there's no representation and no permission. And so I think that we're stepping out of that because we are very much within context of the original culture, right, telling this story, and we have representation on stage. I mean, we have representation in me.
Well, and the family's involved.
The family's involved, right. And so when we are exploring these traditions and these cultures and the dances and all these different things, I think appropriation. I'm less concerned about appropriation because we have all the things that we need to be able to tell this story and celebrate the culture. We're not doing it out of context.
Yeah.
And you know.
Yeah. But with that said, I think it's a great thing to consider.
Oh, of course.
And,
of course.
And an important thing to also mention about the process and how
absolutely
diligent you've all been in doing something that's entertaining, which is sometimes a little bit of a trade-off too.
Right.
Because if you try to do something completely documentary, you know, go to sleep, and nobody's going to buy a ticket to go, you know, take a two-hour nap watching the Rebels do a documentary. So trying to get the entertainment piece and the happy piece along with the this actually happened and there were some things piece,
right,
that's hard.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Believe me, I know.
Yeah.
Bringing, you know, a time of when people were enslaved to the Rebel stage is definitely something that we have to acknowledge. But we have to acknowledge it. I guess that's the statement.
I want to talk a little bit about the Rebels in general. Seneca Village can be a part of this, but just about the troupe. First of all, and I'll maybe go down the line for this and start with the musical piece. Where do you get your talent from? I know for this particular production, you kind of cherry pick some people who are really involved in that aspect of folk music and some expertise. But generally speaking, can people audition for this? Are they in the community, or how do you go about it?
We draw from the community. Every year we have auditions for this particular show. We have lots of other opportunities to perform throughout the year. But for this one, we get a chorus, an adult chorus of about 30 to 35 people. We have a kids chorus of about 15. And then we pull in our folk band, which is often our tradition bearers from whichever culture we're dealing with. And we also have a brass quintet plus percussion that is there every year. So the forces on stage are many and multitudinous and very talented in lots of different ways.
How long do you have to pull this together? I mean, when did they say, hey, by the way, we're doing Seneca Village circa 1825, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
How long did you have?
We choose our show. We try to choose our show in February or January, and hopefully we have an ongoing plan years in advance, but that's when we settle on it, and then we start pulling the forces together, contracting the musicians and seeing who's going to help us with this, who's going to be actors. This Rebels is a unique setup where it's trained amateurs and professionals working together. So our amateur chorus, we have probably two-thirds of them returning every year.
Right.
So there's some kind of continuity and there's some kind of education involved in that.
Yeah, so they're not starting from the ground floor. They know what the flow is, how the show's going to develop. Okay, I gotcha.
But it's still everyday people who have jobs and kids and all the things. So pulling that together is interesting.
Nice. Amy, on the acting piece too, because it's not just musicians, it's also players. How does that process work and who can be involved?
Well, again, it's through the audition process, regardless if it's a chorus piece or not. But we did some special auditions this year so that we had a broader scope of culturally appropriate actors. Oftentimes,
you had to go a little wider.
We did have to go a little wider, And then oftentimes we find people through people. And that's been helpful, too. And Michelle has people in her circle from which we can draw as well. So. I think it's going to always be a customizable situation from show to show.
Yeah.
Revels is also a national network, and so we can pull on other cities and their connections and network to get people where they need to be.
Do you ever look at other cities and go, oh, that would be awesome, let's do that, and then it's a little more developed?
Yes.
And you'll need these parts, these pieces, and maybe that year?
Historically, everything came from our main mothership in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But over the years, we've started growing our own from where we come from. But we often borrow things, people, ideas, scripts, props,
which makes
everything
sense.
From everywhere.
Because a lot of the legwork's been done. So.
And also just for the local artists, since I have this platform, Revels has really in the past 5 years been in this phase of it's a transition, I guess, to open up, expand the stories that we're going to tell. So for local artists out there of color, especially, that love being on stage, love music, love theater, you know, get in touch with the website and watch what's going to happen over the next few years, because the stories are going to expand.
So it's
and
not,
we need you.
It's not just Western European Christmas.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I wanted to talk to you too, Michelle. We've talked to you mostly as the playwright, but about the stage direction too. Again, it sounds like maybe 10, 11 months to pull this together. So you have got to start building set pieces, start doing the blocking, start doing the scene changes. I mean, who do you tap for resources? Are there people in theater here who can help you with that, or how does that go?
Well, Revels has a team that comes together to do that. Yeah, set designer, lights, costumes, props.
I want your job then.
So my job is to write it. So that just took a lot of research and a lot of just getting down to write this show. And I have a wonderful sort of format that's been passed back down to me that I could use to write the show. And then to start to cast it and then stage it. I mean, it's all a part of the process that I've been doing for years. But it starts early, though.
This program is going to air just before the show opens, and the shows run December 14, 15, 17, and 18. Amy, what can folks do to get involved, to come see the show? Are you typically sold out, or can they slide in if they want to? Talk to folks.
Well, we encourage people to get tickets early
for
this particular show. And the way to do that is to go to our website, which is PugetSoundRevels.org. On the website, you can buy tickets, or you can reach out to our box office, and the phone number's on that website as well. But I would also encourage people just to get to know Puget Sound Revels. We do things all year round. And on our website, you'll see opportunities to get involved. Sign up for our newsletter so you know what's happening. We have some exciting things that we do in the community, including a dragon parade. So watch for that.
What's the dragon parade?
Megan?
In 2020, when we were unable to be flinging joy in person, we wanted to lift people's spirits in the dark of winter. And so we commissioned our former potentate of props, Steve LaBerge, to build us a dragon, a fire-breathing dragon that we could take out to the neighborhoods. And we started with a parade with this dragon and some people dressed with lights and a trumpet player in the back of a pickup truck. And we just showed up in people's neighborhoods, did a loop around, shouted out, played some music, and hopped back in and went to another neighborhood.
And now it's a thing.
There are three of them coming up. There's, they're in November this time. Sometimes they're in December, but we visit different neighborhoods, and we've been working with the neighborhood councils to kind of help pull that together, and we're hoping to get more and more buy-in from neighborhood groups and organizations.
And give us a feel for the rest of the calendar. Of course, the Christmas slash holiday slash solstice, because you guys work off the agrarian calendar, from what I understand, is a known thing for the Revels. What other things throughout the year are touch points in addition to Dragon Parade? What else is
we
out?
Have something almost every month of the year.
Really?
And they are seasonal celebrations. And there are also just other things that we do. Like we do a panel discussion with BIPOC artists called Our Truths. That is a way to kind of enlighten the community about those BIPOC artists, they're local, and what they bring to our community.
So a real engagement piece along with that the actual production.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And then we do May Day in Wright Park. We have a maypole and dancing, singing, and parading. We do the Bridge Sing, Tacoma Glass Bridge Sing, which is a procession across the bridge with singing stops along the way. Megan?
Pub sings. Revels, if you come to a Revels show, be prepared to participate in whatever way that makes you happy. But all of our seasonal celebrations and events that we do all include participation, engagement, you being a part of this celebration. Our idea is that we're teaching cultures and neighborhoods and groups of people how to celebrate together.
And flinging joy, which I love.
Flinging joy.
Great.
Fomenting communal effervescence and flinging joy.
Great conversation. I appreciate all of you coming to Northwest Now and helping us learn a little bit more about Puget Sound Revels. And I'll say this, break a leg.
Thank you.
I love the Revels motto, we fling joy. The bottom line, we need some joy, and anything that promotes it is worth your time.